Welcome to Fanboy News Network, your guide to geek culture. I'm Jeff Harris.
And I'm Daniel Christensen.
And, well, we're at this event that happens every year. Mm-hmm. I have to re-record the copyright tag at the end of the episode. Because I need to put a new year in there.
You know, they keep saying it's the year of the dog, but I keep writing chicken on my check.
So, you know, obviously it's New Year's. Hi, everyone. We're back.
Happy New Year.
So you're a fan of Discworld.
Oh, yes.
So on Discworld.net, this year is Year of the Justifiably Defensive Lobster.
Okay, well.
So that's I like that one.
You know, Terry Pratchett may be gone, but his particular breed of insanity will just live on for...
And we're richer for it.
Indeed.
You know, that's one of the things, you know, boy, talk about a digression and complete sidetrack from where I wanted to start. But one of the things I'm really looking forward to in the new year is going to be the Good Omens series.
Oh, yes. Very much yes.
So that's just, you know, you've got Gaiman involved directly as showrunner. I mean, he's directly in charge.
Yes.
We talked before about he has to do this. It was in Terry's will.
Yes. No, and it's one of those things where, I mean, in some senses, it's almost, I'm not saying it's better, but it reminds me of some of those things like how certain aspects of the Kennedy files weren't allowed to come out until X number of years after Jackie Kennedy died. You know, it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, Terry's gone, but yeah, this means that it's all Neil and...
Well, Neil and Terry's daughter.
Oh, okay.
She's like co-producer.
Gotcha.
So, yeah. No, it's the spirit of Terry is strong because Neil would have it no other way.
Indeed.
So, anyway, but that's, like I said, a digression. So, here we are, New Year, and this is our New Year episode. But with that, we still have some business to get away, as is our wont.
Business?
We have a
stinking business.
We have a cadence to these episodes.
Oh, we do.
Okay. And unfortunately, we always start out with the unfortunate.
Yes.
And there was a huge unfortunate in geek culture in the last week. Yeah, I'm going to hurt you.
You know, when I have to look stuff up on Urban Dictionary to find out what the heck the kids on my lawn are talking about, and realize not only how evil, how mean-spirited, how dumb something like this is, I'm just going to let you run with it.
So there was an incident, as with Daniel's description here, maybe not everyone is familiar with the term swatting.
And this isn't what you do with a fly or a mosquito. This is...
But for those, you know, this is unfortunately become a very common happening in gaming culture specifically. And it's...
If doxing is considered too light and fluffy for you, there's always swatting.
So, just real quick, for those of you who maybe don't know, swatting is where, if you have a dispute with somebody in an online game, you retaliate by calling the police department and calling in a hostage situation to have a situation that will require the SWAT team to be pulled out.
To show up at the person who owes you $1.50 at their house.
And you know, this has been going on for a few years, and normally it's either A, really scary, or people get arrested, or this one went too far. Well, any swatting incident, in my opinion, goes too far.
Yes.
Swatting is, in and of itself, a vile practice.
Yes.
But this one actually cost a life.
Yes.
So, what happened? So, and the order of events were almost Byzantine, because what happened, two guys, I don't even know their name, they were named somewhere, but or their online handles, I don't know, I think their real names have been released, but these two guys were playing Call of Duty 2, had a dollar...
Not even the new Call of Duty, they're two, okay, yes, go on.
And there was like $1.50 bet.
Buck 50.
And they got into a dispute on it, and one of them threatened to SWAT the other. The guy challenged him, said, yeah, fine, here's my address. Made up an address. Just off the top of his head, made up an address.
What he thought was making up an address.
Yeah. And the other guy, the aggressor, I guess we will call him, reached out to a third party somebody who goes by the alias Swatistic, a guy known for, in fact, a guy who I think actually has a Patreon around swatting. Or a channel. He makes money. He gets views on YouTube or makes money by posting his swatting incidents.
He's a hitman.
Yeah. And
let's just call a spade a shovel here for just a moment. He's a hitman.
Yeah.
With a YouTube following. Welcome to 2018.
And he called in the SWAT. And it turns out the made-up address was, unfortunately, an actual address.
Yeah.
SWAT team comes out, surrounds the house of a man who had nothing to do with the original incident.
Yeah.
Wasn't playing any games, wasn't doing anything.
Had no clue what was happening, except for suddenly there's a helicopter overhead and people telling him to come out with his hands up.
Right. Comes out with his hands up, but also obviously confused. He has no idea whatsoever what's going on. And I think the call was that somebody had been shot, there was a hostage situation, and the house had been saturated with gasoline. Anyway, since he was confused, apparently he started lowering his hands, and that freaked somebody on the SWAT team out, and they shot him. Now, so far, the only just thing in this is the Swatistic has been arrested.
Good.
He was investigated because of this, and they found a previous warrant for his arrest for calling in bomb threats.
Oh, because that carries a long and lengthy sentence.
So he is, and of course his justification when he was challenged on this was that he didn't kill anyone. He didn't pull a trigger. You know, he just made a phone call. But he's not responsible for anyone's death.
Of course not. He involved the emergency services of a given area. He filed a false report, and yeah, his negligence led to someone. This is why I want to say lots and lots of words that are not allowed on this podcast.
Yeah. So there's been pushes before for a national law against swatting.
But let me guess, someone's opposed to them.
Yeah, because it's a waste of effort.
Because
America. Or more to the point, they don't understand that it's like, why do we need a law over people arguing about a game?
Well,
and the answer is because now somebody's died.
Yes, and these are laws being argued by people who think that the internet is a bunch of tubes.
Yeah,
I'm just yeah, no, don't, homie, don't play that. Folks, I'm just gonna hop up on my little soapbox here, because let's just start this year off right. For whatever reason, we are living in a time and in a place where people are kind of divorced from the consequences of their actions. And in some situations and in some circumstances, people are starting to have to pay the consequences for those actions. And I really hope that that becomes a recurring trend, in that people being actually held accountable for the things that come out of their mouths, for the things that come out of their fingers, because they mean things. They're not just wind. Sorry, end of soapbox.
Well,
let's talk about something fun.
Well, before we talk about something fun.
Oh, there's more.
One more I want to touch on.
Okay.
And this also involves YouTube.
Oh, is this the idiot in Japan?
Yeah.
Oh.
So there's a YouTuber, and that's what I will name because he's a well-known YouTube personality, Logan Paul.
Never heard of him before, but okay.
Same here. Yeah. First I heard about him was when he did this, but apparently in YouTube echelons, he's a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
He was visiting what is the forest in Japan that is known as the Suicide Forest.
Right. For a reason.
And he actually found a dead body. And he filmed it.
Of course.
And made jokes about it.
Of course.
And, yeah, and at no point did anything in him say, hey, maybe this is a bad idea. Put it up. Got, like, 65,000 views and likes before somebody went, you did what? And contacted YouTube.
Yep.
So, and here's the sad thing, and this is the problem. It got taken down not by YouTube, but once the negative publicity started coming out, Logan Paul took it down himself.
Well, the net result is okay. I'm okay with that.
And this was, and to be clear, this was a monetized video.
Of course.
He was getting ad revenue for this and for his apology.
Now, granted, 65,000 views works out
or
to
65,
be...
I don't know, might be million. He's enough. He makes a living at this.
Okay, so...
I don't have the numbers in front of me. A big number that had a lot of people going, well... And part of the problem is, because of how YouTube functions, it's monetization by views.
Of course.
That means bad behavior is actually actively encouraged.
Of course.
And that's the challenge. And YouTube, part of the issue with YouTube is that so much video gets uploaded on a daily basis.
Yeah, they have no way of having people go through it all.
Right.
Like an actual person.
And
with, you know, feelings and a conscience.
But the other issue they have is they are tiptoeing so carefully around things. When they do make a statement on something like this, it is the most vague non-statement.
Mealy-mouthed, I believe, is the word you're looking for.
And part of this is they are trying to avoid actual government regulation. Which, and there you already have the broken DMCA situation where all the power is in the hands of the corporations who can claim, take it down, it's a violation without any actual investigation. And there's no penalty for making a false claim.
Yep.
So, yeah, it's one of those things that in the future, hopefully, I don't know what can be done, because either you create better algorithms, which is the challenge right off the bat,
yeah,
or you start holding people that they're, like you said earlier, there has to be real consequences.
And the rest of the story is, I'm going to offer you that there's another possibility here.
Okay.
It started about... a year ago, go figure, mm-hmm. act shocked, with the concept of what's called no platforming, which means that things that are of a certain way of looking at things, shall we say, mm-hmm. Basically there's you let it die from lack of air.
Mm-hmm.
You'd stop, you what's the word I'm looking for? There,
you don't.
We often make a reference to people who slow down to rubberneck at car crashes, and if we would all just keep going, the traffic would rectify itself a little faster. It's the same thing of keeping your eyes on the road, do not let things in. Do not look at it out of morbid curiosity to see these things. Refuse to give people a platform and reward them for bad behavior. I mean, there is a group of anti-scientific nuts. And I'm not even going to give deign to mention who they are, but they are a group of people who hold beliefs that common sense and scientists 4,000 years ago figured out. But they decided that they're wrong. And I just don't give them platform. I don't give them bandwidth. I don't talk about them. I don't make fun of them. If I find out someone is of that thing, I just don't interact with them at all. And it's wonderfully liberating in some respects. The problem is that just when you think that the world's made of, and you've made something foolproof, they go and invent a better fool.
Yeah.
So, sorry.
And I was doing a quick check while you were, and yeah, it looks like it was in the millions.
Yeah.
He regularly gets 10 million views per his videos.
Okay, million views, not $1 million. Because a million views turns out to be what, $1,000?
I don't know what the going rate is right now.
It's not that much, but yes. I don't know.
So now that we've got your blood pressure up, let's turn to those happier thoughts you wanted earlier.
Kittens?
You just had one walk past you.
Oh, I did.
Yeah.
Porgs?
Yes, let's talk about porgs.
Okay, the internet is for porg.
Let's talk about, since we last recorded.
Yes.
A couple movies have come out. We will talk about the year overall in a minute, but a couple of recent movies have occurred that I think bear some discussion. So let's start with the big kahuna. Let's talk about Star Wars The Last Jedi.
Yes. Lovely, lovely movie.
So as we eagerly anticipated from his nap 2 years.
Yes, I fully expect The Force Awakens The Last Jedi from his nap.
Yeah. I don't know that anyone who listens to this podcast hasn't already heard multiple discussions on the subject of The Last Jedi and the controversy of people just, not the movie itself. The movie itself is in no way controversial.
Yeah.
The controversy is people's reaction to the movie.
That's a nice way of putting it. Okay, yeah.
Yeah. Like I said, I don't even think there's a point of us doing anything like a review of the movie. We loved it. It's Star Wars. We're children of the right era. I mean, you and I were kids when the original trilogy was in the theater.
Oh, yes.
Star Wars is a formative part of our culture specifically.
It is a formative part of our culture. And I think you can cut this out later if you so desire.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing. Here was my takeaway from it. Is specifically that yes, I grew up on Star Wars. I cut my teeth on Star Wars. The original Star Wars, what y'all now call A New Hope, came out on the same weekend as my 6th birthday. I went to see it for my 6th birthday. It has been that ingrained of a part of my life for as long as since I've had some semblance of an awareness beyond the end of my nose. And what I've been enjoying is watching how the stories have grown up with me. And because, let's face it, the last 3 movies that have come out mm-hmm. have taken the level of storytelling deeper and more nuanced than any of the previous movies. And I really appreciate that. And it's in a similar sense of like how you can look at a horror movie and tell sort of what era it was made in. What is it the people are afraid of? And it's the similar sort of vein of what is it that we are fighting against? What is it that we're fighting for? So in that particular respect, I really have a deep respect for The Last Jedi, and I look forward to seeing what happens next.
Yeah. So, yeah, and the controversy, let's face it, the controversy boils, you actually at dinner, I think, made the point, and I know you pulled it from another article.
Yes, I did,
but in recent history, go ahead.
It's something that I've been saying myself for the last couple of weeks, but I was thrilled to finally found an article that spelled it out. You know, in the last, I'd say, I don't know, 2 years, there's been this series of movies that all these guys feel the need to voice their criticism of. And it's not really anything particular that they can put their finger on, but it's just this vague sort of, I don't know, I just don't like it. And it, you know, it doesn't speak to me. And there are things like the Ghostbusters reboot and The Force Awakens and The Last Jedi and Mad Max and Wonder Woman and...
I wonder what those movies have in common.
I don't know, but I've heard the same thing, same complaints leveled at, oh, I don't know, The New Doctor and Star Trek Discovery. And just, I don't know, they just seem so random. I'd wonder what in the world the similarity could possibly be.
Yeah.
Sorry. If you don't like something, own it. Sorry, so this is Daniel being grumpy.
Here, this is the Grumpy Daniel episode.
Wow, man! I even had dinner first and everything.
Yeah, your blood sugar should be fine.
Yeah,
so, for me, all right, so obviously, we both saw Last Jedi opening weekend.
Yes.
Yeah, that was going to happen.
I have seen all 9 movies opening week. It is mandatory.
But I had an interesting experience of kind of how I closed out the year movie-wise and then opened up 2018 movie-wise. So for Christmas, it is a well-known fact that I get together with the Don't Read the Latin crowd.
Yes.
And we do a movie night every Friday night.
Yes.
Normally horror movies.
Yes.
On the weekend of Christmas, so Friday before Christmas, we decided, you know what? We're not going to watch a horror movie. We are going to do something different.
I figured Nightmare Before Christmas would be the horror.
We watched Anti-Mame.
Oh, my.
With Rosalind Russell. And,
da, 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 da,
well, this is the non-musical. Oh. You're thinking of the Lucille Ball musical version. Well, this is the original.
My problem is I also conflate MAME and Hello Dolly in my head. But go on.
So, and one of the first things that was discussion is exactly how much Jillian may have imprinted up on this movie as a child.
Would you like me to act shocked?
And but also just, again, the memory of what a wonderful film it is.
Mm-hmm.
So that was just a nice, especially because one member of our party had never seen it before.
Oh, cool.
And it was like, oh, you get to enjoy this for the first time. Yay. The last movie I saw in 2017 was a direct-to-video release called Dave Made a Maze.
Does it do what it says on the box?
It really does.
Okay.
Dave Made a Maze.
Outstanding.
And it is the story of a out-of-work artist.
Sorry. Yes, go on.
Who, you know, he lives with his girlfriend, and she's out of town for a weekend, and he gets bored.
So he makes a maze.
He makes a cardboard maze in the living room, and then gets lost in it.
That takes some doing.
And the reason it gets lost in it is somehow this maze he made in the living room takes on TARDIS-like qualities and becomes bigger on the inside than the outside.
Okay, that sounds cool.
And little things he made start coming to life. And the maze starts taking on a life of its own. And somebody even questions, so when did Dave gain the ability to bring inanimate objects to life?
And so, to be certain, this is horror, or
it's kind of it's horror comedy, because even though everything in the movie is silly, he built silly gag death traps that become real, and so people do die in the movie.
In the Daniel Gross Autometer.
So when somebody gets her head cut off, it happens when the blade goes across. Instead of a slice, it's one of those ribbon things you'd wear around your neck.
Okay.
And when her head off screen falls off and the blood spurts, the blood is yarn.
Okay. Hey, they did that in the remake of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy when after the subnormality or the,
yeah,
whatever it was, the improbability drive.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm yeah. Oh, for your, you're not going to have any problem with this movie, okay, because even the violent stuff is... just, it has that goofy quality. And that's the whole, and here's the other thing. A, whoever the art director of this movie was, and this movie was made on a micro budget.
Okay.
Whoever their art director was, is a freaking genius.
Really?
It was amazing to look at. And, again, it didn't cost much because by the basic conceit of the movie, the entire sets are made out of cardboard.
I see, okay, I'm liking this. This sounds fun.
It is somebody, and the actors are all, I recognize most of the cast.
Yeah.
But that's because, A, I'm a stand-up comic fan, and a lot of them are either members of the stand-up comic scene, or are people who do, a lot of them are voice actors.
Mm-hmm.
One of the main characters is James Urbaniak, who is best known as the voice of Dr. Venture on the Venture Brothers.
And you mentioned another one over dinner that made me laugh out loud.
Well, was it, Rick Overton?
From Dark Knight? No,
I think you're confusing with the other movie I saw.
Okay, go on, my bad.
But, no, they have Rick Overton is a longtime stand-up comic.
Mm-hmm.
They had, Adam Bush from Buffy the Vampire Slayer. just this whole cast of, oh, hey, I kind of know that. I recognize that guy. Adam Thune is Dave. And yeah. He's like, oh, yeah, I've seen you on At Midnight with Chris Hardwick and all these other things. So just a great, fun cast and really a group of people who were able to buy into the goofball concept and just play it.
That sounds great.
So I highly recommend Dave Made a Maze to anyone. So great movie to end the year on.
Excellent.
And then a few days later, on New Year's Day,
ta-da,
Larissa and I went and saw The Shape of Water.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And I think this is the one you're thinking of. The Shape of Water is the latest Guillermo del Toro movie. And anyone who's listened for a long time to this podcast knows my deep love of Guillermo del Toro movies.
Well, because they're awesome.
And this is Guillermo in fine, fine form.
Well, you had mentioned that this is something that he had in his heart of hearts has been wanting to do since he was a little boy.
When he was, he says, about 6 years old.
Yeah.
And he says, so the same age you found Star Wars.
Yeah.
He found Creature from the Black Lagoon.
That right there, that's one of those, you know, that's a diversions point. Okay, go on.
And he, as a little tyke, was convinced that the Gill Man and the girl were going to get together. And when they didn't, he was highly disappointed. And he has spent his whole life crafting himself into a fine filmmaker just so he can make that better.
Yes.
So Shape of Water, first off, it's very much, I feel, a companion piece to Pan's Labyrinth in that both are set in the 60s, although one's in Mexico or Spain, actually, I think. And the other
Pan's
is...
Labyrinth? Pan's Labyrinth? Was in Spain.
Was in Spain. And I keep, because he himself is Mexican. I always want to say Mex. But, and Shape of Water is set in America. But 1960s, and it follows a mute woman who works as a cleaning woman at a government facility. And the government facility gets a, let's face it, gets basically a creature brought to it who is very clearly meant to be a direct homage to the creature from the Black Lagoon.
Yeah.
Similar character design, found in the same region. And this woman forms a bond with the creature.
Yeah.
And since she's mute, you know, she always communicates with sign language, and the creature starts responding because he's intelligent enough to pick up the sign language.
Course.
Which A shows, okay, so he's sapient.
Yeah. Yeah. Not just a monster. Wasn't one of the lines about the whole idea that the monsters are...
Guillermo del Toro's monsters are never the monsters.
Exactly.
His creatures, his fantastic beings are almost always the heroes of his movie.
They can be. Now granted, Pan's Labyrinth had some scary damn shit.
Oh, yeah, but this is, and again, it's a fairy tale, and mm-hmm. it's also, at its core, a romance. And it is, honestly, I mean, I enjoyed, when I've talked about the brilliant art direction of Dave Made a Maze,
mm-hmm.
that's great, but on a goofy level. This was just, Guillermo del Toro has such a good eye.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know who his DP on this movie was. But whatever they were paying them, I don't know that it was enough.
Well, there might be a little golden man that might have something to say about that. So
yeah, it is a beautiful movie, and art itself is a factor in the movie. So Del Toro always has great art books for his movies, and the poster, which is a drawn poster. We were walking to the theater, and Larissa stopped and went, I want. It is a gorgeous poster. So it's just a beautiful movie and fantastic actors. I cannot think. I feel bad. You have the internet in your pocket. I'm trying to remember Emily is her first name. The woman who is the lead in this. Now, Doug Jones, not the new senator from Alabama, but the actor and pantomime performer who has worked with Del Toro over the years,
yes,
plays the creature. And I think one of the reasons you keep going back to a Doug Jones is this is a man who absolutely knows how to transcend a ton of makeup.
Oh, yeah. No, I've seen him in a million things. Doug Jones. I mean...
Yeah, but the woman's who I'm trying to remember.
Oh, sorry. My bad.
But while I'm vamping on Jones's performance
Sally
to...
Sally Hawkins?
Sally... Yeah. Sally Hawkins. Because she's playing a mute character. Mm-hmm. So you have these two characters that are communicating without voice.
Yeah.
Throughout the entire movie. And here's a brilliant subversion. So, Octavia Spencer plays... the lead female's best friend and co-worker. So, and then her neighbor is a closeted gay man. Because she is mute, those two do most of the talking in the movie.
Yeah.
I mean, he is just... This is a finely crafted film. And you have Michael Shannon as the main bad guy from mm-hmm. Boardwalk Empire and Man of Steel.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Stolberg, I can never pronounce his last name. I feel bad. He's a great actor. He starred with, also on Boardwalk Empire, as mm-hmm. well as Michael Shannon, as Al Rothstein, for people who want to...
Yeah.
And it is just... And a whole bunch of actors that I recognize from a bunch of Canadian TV shows.
That's the one.
Now, Nigel Bennett, for example, from Forever Night.
Forever Night. That's what it was. Not yeah, Dark Knight. Duh.
Is a prominent character in this movie. And it's like, I was like, oh, I've loved him for years. I'm glad he's still working and getting a good, juicy role.
Nice.
And Dave Hewitt from Stargate Atlantis. And the neighbor is Bradley Whitford's fellow technician from Cabin in the Woods.
Bradley Whitford as in...
Yeah, as in Josh Lyman, yeah.
Okay, awesome.
Yeah. I have to remember, you've not actually seen Cabin in the Woods yet.
I don't get out much.
We need to correct that one of these days.
You know, there are a few others that are ahead of that on the list.
But I'm just saying, Shape of Water, brilliant movie.
Well, two things. One, I like Doug Jones already because apparently he and I have the same birthday.
Mm-hmm.
But, he was in Pan's Labyrinth. He was the fish creature in Hellboy.
He was, Abe Sapien. He was Pan in Pan's Labyrinth.
Yeah.
He was
in Crimson Peak.
Yeah, he was the ghosts in Crimson Peak. He and many other things. He is a brilliant physical performer. I mean, he's a good actor, too.
Yeah.
I've seen non-makeup roles where he's done a great job, but he is...
And he's the alien dude on the new Star Trek Discovery.
Again, he's a man. You can put him under a ton of makeup and he will transcend it.
Yeah.
This is why you hired Doug Jones. It is one of Jennifer Lovely's goals to hug this man.
Hey, live the dream. I have to say, just as an interjection here, because you talk about how this was his dream to make this movie since he was little,
mm-hmm.
and pointed out how I saw Star Wars when I was that same similar age and how it's stuck with me and it's been a formative thing. The other thing that springs to mind is The Fifth Element. And yes, it's over the top and it's campy as all hell, but it still stands the test 20 years later.
Yeah, it's held up.
And because that was the guy who directed that, or who wrote that, that was one of his stories that he was working on when he was young as well.
Yeah.
And it's that idea of doing things that you love, as opposed to things you don't love, see earlier in the discussion that we've had right. This evening.
Yeah, well, and I think, again, one of the things one of the people said with Del Toro is, this is what he's wanted to do, but it's not the first thing he did.
Yeah.
He spent years honing his craft.
Yep.
I think, just to get the clout to make the movie,
because
this could not have been an easy pitch.
No.
You pretty much have to have the track record of Guillermo del Toro at that stage. And he self-financed most of this movie. But a lot of people have said he just took the time to become one of the finest film directors you could possibly have, just so he could do this justice to this idea.
Yeah.
Because this could have been a horrible, laughable mess in the hands of a lesser director.
Yep.
So with that, because this is kind of, it's the new episode for the new year. So let's look back.
Let's look back. I have a summary of some of the big movies that came out this last year.
So I want to start right off the bat with in your opinion, what was your favorite movie last year? What do you feel was the best movie? Let me take it a different route. Not even going favorite. What do you think was the best movie of the last year?
Oh. Well, I'm sorry, that's a Sophie's Choice sort of question.
Yeah.
Well,
it can be, because it was even though it was a depressed box office, there were some shining stars.
Shining stars. I mean, I find it interesting because there's stuff that I've heard lovely and wonderful things about mm-hmm. that I think deserve credit and recognition that I haven't seen. So I feel a little hypocritical in mentioning mm-hmm. them. That said, Get Out.
Yeah. I'm just going to, right there, Get Out, I've been thinking long and hard. And here's the thing, Get Out came out early in the year.
Yeah.
It was like one of the first movies to come out in the year. And yet, it keeps bubbling up to the top of my list.
Oh, yeah.
And I saw it because A, I'm a horror fan. And B, I really wanted to support the first debut effort of Jordan Peele.
Yeah.
But it was just, and I've seen it a couple of times now. This is a movie that there are already college courses about.
Which is saying something.
So, but that the college courses are a lot about what the movie's saying. It doesn't change the fact that it was a fine piece of filmmaking.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things, somebody said it's almost insulting that a first-time director put out a movie that good. Not to mention, it was the most profitable movie of the year.
Which, given some of the other movies that have come out this year, is saying something.
Well, and again, profitable being, you know, its return versus its investment.
Of course.
Because it has returned. It really is, I mean, it's kind of floating Blumhouse right now.
Yeah, well.
In fact, any new Blumhouse film that comes out is getting a from the producers of Get Out. So, and Sunken Place has now become part of our parlance.
Not me, but well, okay.
It is becoming part of the parlance. A lot of people who do know the film
mm-hmm.
has a very, and it is opening conversation. I think one of the Allison Williams,
okay,
who is the female lead of Get Out, who, okay, a spoiler, she's movie's been out for a year now. She's not a good guy.
Yeah, I've gathered as much.
And she has said that one of the things that has shocked her is the amount of people that come to her trying to justify how her character wasn't actually the villain of the film. Oh, well, she was hypnotized. No, she was fully involved.
Yeah.
You know, all these different excuses. And what it brought up was the idea of there are people who see a beautiful white woman on screen and cannot handle, it almost goes back to part of our earlier discussion of people having trouble with films based on the fact they're female led. But this idea that, you know, it's not even the idea of white superiority that's the problem. It's the idea of white purity. That there's no way this white woman could be this horrible person, even though the actress who portrayed her said, no, really.
Yeah.
She's awful.
Yeah.
I played her as awful.
Yeah. That was a conscious and intentional choice, not only of the actor, but of the writer.
And she has found it eye-opening just by those conversations. So this is a movie, you know, we talked about when it came out how Fury Road, just on the brilliance of the filmmaking, is going to be studied in film school.
Yes.
Decades from now. Get Out for not just the filmmaking, but for the social construct is going to be, it already is being, now, given the college course is being taught primarily by the wife of one of my former teachers, so, and although he is involved as well.
I was going to say, I can imagine who that is, yes, okay.
Tiana Reeve Doe is the primary professor with Steve Barnes,
mm-hmm.
who is one of my mentors. So I have followed this one very closely, but it is, yeah. So I will stand up and say easily, yeah, I think Get Out was the best movie, on a lot of levels.
Excellent.
That came out this year.
See, it's funny because my favorite movie of the year has absolutely nothing to do with this podcast.
All right, that's fair enough. I mean, we're fairly geek culture focused, but some fine. Okay. On the other hand, my favorite movie of all time is Casablanca.
True. Well, I will say this. It does conform to geek culture in one respect.
Okay.
It involves cats.
What movie are we talking about?
It is a documentary called Keddi. K-E-D-I.
Okay.
It is a love story to the town of Istanbul and its colony of feral cats.
So I feel bad because if this were Don't Read the Latin, we would suddenly have the musical tag for Jen's Documentary Corner.
Exactly. Jen's Documentary Corner.
Actually, it's like this. Dun, dun, dun. But anyway.
Yes, it is. It is this lovely and wonderful show about how everyone loves cats and how... I mean, at one point, the one of the guys is talking along and he's giving an interview to the filmmaker and someone rushes up with this wee little kitten who is obviously not doing well and not expected to live. And they're like, oh, gotta go. Shut down the filming and rush to the local veterinarian. Mm-hmm. And he's like, this isn't your cat. The filmmaker is asking him, he's like, this isn't your cat. He's like, oh, I know. Everyone in the neighborhood has got a standing tab at the local vet because they each pick up their own little cat. They take turns taking care of these cats and the lives that they live. And it is just this totally heartwarming, refreshing breath of fresh air in what has been a rough kind of year.
Yeah.
So yeah, Keddi.
Keddi. All right. Is it on streaming?
I have no idea. I'm one of those old school people. I saw it in a theater.
All right.
But it may be.
Yeah, we'll keep an eye open for it.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, now let's turn our gaze then to more on the movie front. Let's talk more geek culture.
Now,
Get Out as a horror film. Definitely, that is a branch of geek.
Yes.
Would
you like to talk about Wonder Woman? Would you like to talk about Logan? Well, would you like to talk about Blade Runner? Would you like to talk about Thor Ragnarok? Or War for the Planet of the Apes? Or It? Or Mother? Or Spider-Man? I mean,
but you're kind of hitting the point that, I mean, even though this was considered a not stellar box office year,
I would offer to anyone who's saying this was not a stellar box office year, are they talking overall or are they talking individual films?
Overall.
Okay, because it's almost a point of saturation.
I mean, there's a strong argument for that. I think, well, all right. If we look at the films you just mentioned...
Which didn't even get into Guardians of the Galaxy
all right, as is part of our ballywick, let's start with superhero films.
Superheroes.
I think we have it easy on what was the best superhero film of this year.
Lego Batman. Oh, sorry.
I really did enjoy Lego Batman.
Wonder Woman.
Yeah, but Wonder Woman, absolutely. Although Wonder Woman did appear in Lego Batman, so there's an argument there. But no.
Well, and technically she showed up in Justice League, but I ain't putting that on the list.
Yeah, but I think we can agree. And I don't think we need to rehash, because when we did our review of Wonder Woman, we talked about all the merits of this film, of which there are many.
Yes.
And I, when I was doing a rewatch... a little bit ago when the DVD came out, or the mm-hmm. Blu-ray, rewatching, thinking about what we had talked about, and that no man's land scene justifies that movie. But the distinct lack of male gaze, the fact that there was such heart.
Mm-hmm.
We could go on again like we did last time. But I think we can agree, from the superhero front, Wonder Woman definitely shined above. And considering it's come from the collection of films which are otherwise generally panned, I mean, the cumulative effect of the success of Wonder Woman versus the rest of the DC cinematic universe is that there has been a house cleaning at the film branch of DC Comics, because it's basically they went, huh, The one film not involving Zack Snyder
is the one that did well.
Worked. There's a clue. And the, basically it has come down to clearly the audiences want more of this, which was not a gritty deconstruction of the superhero myth or the Wonder Woman myth, but a shining praise and holding up of what aspects make that character special.
Yeah, because I mean, okay, let's put it this way. You know, you talk about the fact that Wonder Woman showed up in Lego Batman and also in, was she in Lego Batman?
Yeah. All the Justice League were in Lego Batman okay. At one point or another.
But the fact that she was also in Justice League and, you know, not even giving bandwidth to Zack Snyder. She was in both of those movies.
Mm-hmm.
One of them she was stage dressing. One of them she's shown.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just the fact that she was the lead of the movie that she's shown in. I mean, you look at the nuances and the way that it built a world around the idea that this is a person who is whole and complete in and of herself.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, what a concept. A woman who is capable of being by herself. The horror. And it's lovely, and it's gorgeous, and it's stunning, and I would watch it again in a heartbeat.
Yeah. So, all right. Anyway. So, I think, now, for the rest, all right, so, in the Marvel realm.
Guardians of the Galaxy, Thor Ragnarok.
Marvel just had a good year. Well, they really did. I mean, Marvel usually has a good year, but there were issues with the Doctor Strange, which was the previous outing. It was a fun movie, but there were issues. This year, I mean, Guardians of the Galaxy, or as my my movie-going buddy and I called it, Daddy Issues, the movie.
Yes.
What it had going for it was a ton of heart.
Yes.
There was an emotional core, and yes, fatherhood was, and how we relate to our parents was mm-hmm. a key theme. Somebody pointed out, I was reading, watching a review, it was a video review. Video reviewer Lindsay Ellis was, and was trying to talk about why, you know, completely, unexpectedly, this movie gives her such strong feelings. And part of it was, yeah, the parental issues. But one of the things she pointed out was, that character flaws in this movie are treated as actual flaws. And what she pointed out was, two movies in and Gamora and Star-Lord still haven't gotten together. And
they haven't?
Not really. They're still flirting.
Really?
Even at the end of Guardians 2, notice they're not really together.
Huh.
It's just Gamora is warming to the idea.
Huh. All right.
And what is pointed out is, in the movie, they even make the point that the reason they are having trouble getting together is Star-Lord's immaturity.
Yeah.
His childish behavior is not treated as cute or something endearing, but as an actual roadblock to their developing relationship. And it's that taking the time to point out, yeah, this is a character. He has this common hero character trait, but it is being rightfully treated as a character flaw.
Yeah.
And something he has to work to overcome.
Yeah.
And part of the movie is his kind of having to start realizing that maybe it's time to grow up. So
this shouldn't be a newsflash, people, but okay. Yes.
But the fact is, it often is a shorthand, and that Guardians avoided it.
Yes.
So that's the strength of Guardians. For Spider-Man, I think it's just the fact that everyone's so happy. Hey, look, a Spider-Man film where Spider-Man is actually a teenager.
What a concept.
And acting like a teenager. And there was also point out, also acting like a New Yorker.
How they did that and managed to keep it the rating that it was is a surprise.
But well, things like the fact that while he's interrogating a guy, they get into an argument about what the best deli in town is.
Okay, yes, that aspect of New Yorker, sure.
You know, that's in there. But there was character. I think that's what Marvel is doing right now. is, and this has got to be similar to what's going on with Kathleen Kennedy over at Lucasfilm, this has got to be a top-down from Kevin Feige.
Yeah.
Just because it seems to be happening consistently across their films.
Well, I have to say that, I mean, to step briefly away, I love the fact that we are getting deeper characters. I enjoy the fact that we're getting more fleshed out and interesting plots in that respect. I'm worried what this means in regards to Infinity War. Because...
Infinity War... Here's what I think of Infinity War. It's kind of similar with the Avengers movie. They do a lot of their character development in the individual films.
Yeah.
So that we have these fully fleshed out characters coming into the movie, but then they can just focus on the big action because we already know these guys.
Yeah.
You know, again, it was the genius of the first Avengers movie. We don't need to learn who any of these characters are. We learned that several movies ago. Same thing going into Infinity War. We already know almost all these characters.
Yeah, because we've spent 40 hours getting a two-hour backstory on each one of them.
Now, this doesn't absolve Age of Ultron of its problems.
Oh, don't get me started.
And so the one hope I have is that the directors of Infinity War... We're the guys that made Captain America Civil War.
Which would be lovely.
So I'm having hope that they've shown they can do the bigger things and still have character.
Yeah.
We will see. That's hard. Infinity War is going to be, again, Marvel doing something unlike things that have ever been done before. It's almost unfair to call it an Avengers movie.
Oh, no.
This is Marvel Cinematic Universe. The movie.
Yeah, it's the entire MCU all at once. Yeah. And yeah, it's going to be... I'm more than anything, I'm curious how they're going to get out of that thing in under 4 hours. But yeah. We have kind of ventured far astray from 2017. If I could perhaps offer a slightly alternate perspective on 2017.
All right.
We've talked about some of the good and the awesome, although we did skip over Thor Ragnarok, which was...
It was still good.
A lovely and hilarious movie.
Mm-hmm. Best of the Thor series.
Yes. What I was curious about are the oh yeah, that was in there too. Because there's things like Alien Covenant, which... And things like, what was the other one? Kong Skull Island. And Valerian, City of... all these things where it's just like, oh.
And those have... Well, okay, and it varies. I enjoyed Kong of Skull Island.
Yeah?
It was a fun movie. And I look forward to the fact that it was sort of their launching pad for a series of giant monster movies.
Okay.
We know they're going to... Because, well... You have to see the movie to understand. It was good, and I love the fact in that movie they did two smart things in Kong of Skull Island. One, there was no teasing the gorilla. Within 5 minutes, there's Kong.
Yep, ta-da.
Hi. Because, hey, there's a giant gorilla in this movie.
You think?
And why everyone's coming because they know there's a giant gorilla in this movie, so there's no reason to hide the giant gorilla. We know there's going to be a giant gorilla.
It's like Dave made a maze. It's on the box, people. Yeah.
But the other thing was they had characters acting a lot of... Did you see Kong of Skull Island?
Did not.
John C. Reilly plays this great character who's been trapped on the island since World War II.
John C. Reilly plays a good character. Awesome.
And they play him in a character who's been stuck on this island, and they show how he survived by doing things a smart person would do, like understanding the natives. He doesn't go native. He doesn't become part of the tribe, but he understands and respects them and learns from them. And why is he still alive? Because he's taken the time to learn how you survive on this island from the people who've been doing it.
There you go.
So, just little touches. But when they're done right, they're done right. And this was so, plus it was a weird MCU mashup. Because it starred Tom Hiddleston and I'm going to blank on her name, but the woman who'd be playing Captain Marvel and Samuel L. Jackson.
Sure, why not?
So Loki and Captain Marvel team up with Nick Fury to go chase down a giant gorilla.
Of course, obviously.
But for the rest of them, yeah, some of them, I mean, Alien Covenant, everything I heard was meh.
Yeah.
But hey, that's okay. The Alien Queen is now a Disney princess.
She's, yeah, I'm not going there.
So,
oh, the facehugger is a Disney princess. She's a Disney queen.
That's true. But this also means the other Disney queen is now Frankenfurter.
Indeed.
Yeah. But, sorry.
Another alien. But hey.
Yeah. I mean, that's just it. A lot of stuff came out. A lot of stuff that in any other year might have actually been a big deal. I don't know what it was that I still haven't actually seen Blade Runner, the new one. And I know I'm not the only one.
No, you're not. It starts at the Dollar Theater on tomorrow, so I'll be going there. You know, I think it's funny that is, in a sense, that is almost the theme of 2017. Any other year, this would be a big deal. You know, any other year, a president threatening nuclear war with one of our enemies would be a big deal. Last year, it was like, eh. Sorry, politics invaded the geek culture.
Sometimes, yeah, we do a good job of keeping it out.
Usually, I'll go stand in the corner and think about what I've done now.
So, the one thing I do want to touch on.
Yes.
On podcasts.
Yes.
And B, the subject of things coming to an end.
Oh, okay.
So, I've already ranted a bit about my disappointment at the ending of the Black Tapes podcast.
Oh yeah, for those of you playing the home game, you know that little vein that comes out on your forehead when you get really, really pissed off? He had that vein when he was talking about the Black Tapes.
So, on Christmas Day, Kind of Evil Genius released the final episode of Wolf 359.
Merry Christmas.
And 2-hour episode.
2 hours?
Yeah.
For something,
they even said, yeah, we basically made an audio movie.
Well, not only that, but I mean, they normally only 20-minute
episodes. 20 to 40-minute episodes. They went 2 hours. Well, because they had to complete the story, and they didn't want to rush.
Good.
You know, they wanted to honor, and especially they wanted to, a show that has been so dependent on character development.
Yeah.
They wanted to wrap up their characters, right? And that's the whole point. You know, my big issue with the Black Tapes was they didn't so much wrap up the story as just stop.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, we don't know what we're going to do. Yeah, what, screw it. We're going to give a really cheap-ass non-ending. Wolf 359 spent 2 hours wrapping up every major character on the series, including some that had died previously.
Okay.
And gave them moments and gave them some where you have a sense of completion.
Good.
And they did it in a fulfilling, satisfying... Basically, you're not shaking your fist at the sky. Not everything. I mean, there is cost to the victory.
Of course.
But for a show that started out as essentially Night Vale in space,
yeah,
to end where it did, I know that the difference is I kept with the series. You're waiting to binge.
I'm going to binge.
When you do, I definitely, maybe not here on the podcast, but a discussion of, there was in the end, a nuance to the writing. I mean, the acting was always good.
Of course.
But there was a nuance, especially towards the end, in the writing of Wolf 359, that as a writer myself, and as a script writer of things like it, I'm trying to take note just on the, boy, I hope I get to some point where I'm somewhat that good.
Yeah.
Now, given they had a staff, there were 3 primary writers for Wolf 359. And they all contributed to the final episode.
I would hope so.
And, but in the end, it was, they dealt with everything.
That's amazing.
And they wrapped it up, and in the end, it really, it's one of those things, and they did leave it at a point where, if, you know, there could be more story to tell, but there doesn't have to be more story to tell.
Yeah, they've reached an... Well, what was his name? Rich Berlew. No one's going to recognize the name, but he writes a webcomic called Order of the Stick.
Right.
He had a line that has stuck with me forever. He said, the stories never stop. They just reach a point where the storytellers stop talking. Mm-hmm. You know, people don't stop. Things keep going. So, yeah, there could be more story there, but there doesn't have to be.
Yeah.
So, I'm looking forward to binging. I have a long period of time that I'm looking forward to uninterrupted, and that's what I'm going to fill it with. So,
So with that, anything else on 2017, or what are you looking forward to in the new year? Let's go that way.
I'm looking forward to seeing 2017 in my rearview mirror. We can start with that.
Well, here's the interesting thing. I mean, there was a lot of terrible things, and I know, especially on certain cultural levels, we get upset. But on a lot of levels, this was also a very good year.
You're right. I mean, for my own self, just beyond not going any further than the end of my nose, I lost my job that I'd had for 14 years, and I got a new one. I got to go on a vacation that I've been fantasizing about for 30 years, and I finally got to do it. So I got to see the totality of the solar eclipse this summer. That was amazing and humbling and jaw-droppingly beautiful. From those perspective, it's great and it's wonderful. But it's looking beyond the end of my own nose that where I start to see my other things that have no place in this podcast, and I'm really not going to go into it. But it boils down to the fact that my friends are hurting, and just because I had a good year doesn't mean I can't overlook my friends being in trouble.
Yeah.
So there's that.
Yeah, just kind of the balance of the good with the bad. But what about from geek culture? Let's stick to our Ballywick.
So our Ballywick, I have to say there's media that I'm looking forward to consuming.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very excited about Black Panther.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious about Infinity War. I am cautiously trepidatious about Ready Player One, which, before anyone rage quits, I realize is problematic, and I have spent my entire life loving problematic media and still keeping a critical eye on it. So there's that. I've got a TBR list that's as high as my hip at this point. But I'm looking, there's stuff there that I'm looking forward to. I'm just excited to see what happens next.
Yeah.
So, you?
A lot the same. Black Panther, which is coming up shortly, I'm very excited about. Infinity War, also coming from that comic geek perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Very curious to see what happens with that. I am also really deeply curious how well they're going to pull off the next Star Wars prequel film.
Oh, yes.
Solo, because with Rogue One, they had the advantage of, we don't really know these characters.
Uh-huh.
This is the untold story of the Star Wars universe. Now we're getting the backstory of one of the most beloved characters. Three, actually, of the most beloved characters in the franchise. Because we're getting backstory on Han, Chewie, and Lando.
Yes.
And if they do not bring back Billy Dee Williams somehow, there is crime. But God bless Donald Glover.
Oh, the fact that Donald Glover is in there warms my nerd heart to the nth degree. And, you say if there is no Billy Dee Williams, it is a crime against humanity. I say if they do not have the Kessel Run in it, it will be a crime that against really... all. There will be the nerd riots of 2018.
So I think that is... and I know that there are other things, obviously, that are coming up that will be great and we're curious about. But I think those are the big tent poles.
Yep.
Those are the big, at this moment, what I'm excited about. And as we mentioned at the top of the show, Good Omens.
Oh, yes.
I just cannot wait. I'm also really looking forward to, and that's the one thing we didn't talk about TV-wise.
Yes.
We're going to run long this episode. We knew we were going to run long this episode. But briefly, Doctor Who.
Oh, yes.
So, have you seen the Christmas special yet?
All I saw was the regeneration scene.
Okay. So the Christmas special, it's an end of the era because it's a showrunner handoff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the end of Capaldi. But there was it did have some of those things that Moffat does that drive people nuts. But there was...
the casual misogyny? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry.
To a certain degree. But overall, what you had was... examination again of what makes the show special, in that they had the counterpoint of the first Doctor, played by the always brilliant David Bradley, and the of the Doctor, and just sort of an examination of how the characters evolved. Things, you know, they had a whole running theme of things that we now take as standard of Doctor Who. The first Doctor had no idea what was going on because he hadn't done it yet.
Yep.
This was the Doctor before he formed some of those ideas that have driven to where the Doctor is now. A central theme was, you know, why did you leave Gallifrey? I could not understand why, you know, good by its value should be weak, and yet the universe holds together, and I had to go out to find out what is holding the universe together. And the person he says this to, it's not the Doctor, but looks at him and says, oh, you're going to find out, and I cannot wait. The ultimate self-fulfilling prophecy.
Indeed.
But then, yes, you get that regeneration. Mm-hmm. Actually, you get a more proper, and they then go back to the original from the series. You do get the first Doctor regeneration.
Yeah.
But then you get one of the most brilliant regeneration. You saw the regeneration scene.
Yeah.
You know, one of the best speeches. You know, and really a counterpoint to, you had the monologue for the ending of David Tennant.
Yeah.
And the end of the Russell T. Davies era, which was, I don't want to go. And the end of the Moffat era, which is, I let you go.
Yeah.
And a Doctor at peace. But the speech to his future self is just one of the most brilliant pieces of writing. It's like, that's the Moffat that earned the role of showrunner for that, for moments like that. Yeah. And Capaldi, you know, who has loved that series since he was a young man.
Oh, yeah.
Getting that final grand moment on that stage. And now we get the anticipation of what is the Jodie Whittaker era going to look like.
Can hardly wait.
I do, yeah, I did love, this may be a little spoilery, but the Doctor's reaction to her new face.
Brilliant.
Yeah, absolute joy. And you can see it's like, I'm finally a girl! Oh, it's different! Yay! Which may be the heart of Doctor Who.
Yeah, the wonder. And you know what? Frankly, after... Well, it was last year this time when the expression, the future is female, started getting bandied around.
Which came directly from Doctor Who.
Oh.
Okay. The future is female came from other places. But in the last episode of the proper season, the Master of Doctor... Is the future all girls? The Doctor goes, we can only hope so.
Exactly.
And it was like, yeah, even though they hadn't cast Whittaker at that point, that they had been laying the groundwork for 2 years at least. Cool. So,
The only other thing I would toss in on TV is, because you know me, you are the cutting edge, you are the bleeding edge of nerd. I'm the, hey, I found this thing the other day that's been around for a couple of years. The Expanse. Started the Expanse series, burning through that at a rapid pace.
And I think you're actually ahead of me now. I haven't started the second season yet.
I've started the second season. It's and it's due back to the library this weekend, so I've got to finish it soon.
Yeah.
But, yeah, wow.
Expanse is good TV.
Yeah.
My understanding, I've not read the books, you have.
Only one.
My understanding is they're coming from good source material, first off.
Yes.
And they are, while making necessary modifications, adhering pretty closely to some of the ideas, which is, again, the best science fiction is a mirror to society.
Indeed. And I have to say, I don't know who specifically, or if there's just been this bending arc towards more in-depth storytelling and more, not necessarily complex plots, but meaty plots. Things where things, you know, where people aren't exactly cut and dried one way or the other, but it's not a grimdark.
Well, I think... You
know, it's finding those that something that gives it gravitas.
I think what's happened over the years, you had series where, like in Buffy the Vampire Slayer, they had the Monster of the Week, but there was a season-long arc.
Yeah.
And that then evolved to a season that is simply one story. Mm-hmm. You know, you have... entire TV series now that, you know, it's not the mystery of the week. It's, there's a mystery that's going to take us the entire season.
Or seasons.
To unpack. And the fact that storytellers have realized what Joe Michael Straczynski figured out years ago, which is it is possible to tell a long-form, in-depth, nuanced story in 13 hours. Marvel has been doing it on Netflix for a couple of years now.
Say hallelujah, brother.
And that's Expanse has also picked up on the, oh, hey, we don't have to do an episodic thing. We can tell a story.
Mm-hmm. And frankly, you know, I well, if nothing else, something's going to fill in the year between now and when Game of Thrones comes back.
True. I would say the only other thing I want to add to finish out TV for the year is I finally finished season one of The Orville.
Ah, yes.
And the realization as I'm watching it that what The Orville, the reason I realized I've been enjoying it is the simple fact that it is the optimism of old Star Trek.
Oh,
it is a show based, even though it does get some of the lower brow humor Seth MacFarlane is known for, it also has at its core just simple optimism.
Nice.
And, you know, characters that, you know, do care. I mean, they're trying to do a good job and they're good at what they do. They just have character flaws.
Don't we all?
And it is just, we were watching an episode, Larissa and I, it was like the second to last episode of the season. And I was like, there are funny things happening, but this is actually a very telling story about where they got things like the first officer was explaining something and realizing, she said, it's my duty as first officer too. And it's like, that is actually a first officer's job.
Yep.
And they it was a lot of talk about, you know, why a smart person might hide his intelligence, how a military exploration vessel would actually need to function. And it was like, so a lot of thought. Yeah. And yes, they find the room for the humor.
Of course.
But in the end, it's like, well, I guess the Orville is keeping the spirit of Star Trek, the core spirit of Star Trek, alive.
Which, frankly, I'm sure that Seth MacFarlane would be thrilled to hear.
Yeah, well, you know, this is, they're getting another season, so more power to them.
Indeed.
So with that, we went a little long this week, but it's the first time back from the year, so why not? If you, our listening audience, want to reach out to Daniel and I, we can be reached at fanboynewsnetwork.com. You can just drop us a line in the comment section for the episode. We will be back in the near future.
Of course.
I've got some travel coming up, so our schedule for the first couple of months might be a little spotty. We'll just apologize for that now.
Well, don't apologize, earn it. You get to go on a trip. I get to go on a trip. We get to go on trips.
That's true. So with that, thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you all again soon.
Take care, y'all.
This program is produced by Jeff Harris and Fanboy News Network and is copyright 2018 to Jeff Harris and Fanboy News Network. All rights are reserved, including rights to copy and redistribute this program. All music in this podcast comes from the Footage Firm and is used under a royalty-free license.